Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 14, Desperate Struggle. I am one of your co-hosts, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my friend and colleague, Chris Slate.
Hello!
We are back this week to talk about Nintendo stuff. We've got a bunch of cool news to report on, and our big topic for this week is going to be about the rise and fall, and rise and fall again, of one of our favorite companies, Konami. But first, we're going to kick it off with the news. And we got some really cool, exciting news out of Nintendo just a day or two ago, and that is that the highly anticipated new Nintendo 3DS system, not the XL, has finally been confirmed for North America.
Yeah, this is the one that has the snap-on faceplates and has the colorful face buttons.
Yeah, the XL version, you know, it has like the colors just on the button. Letters themselves, but it just has, you know, kind of colorless buttons. But yeah, this has the actual yellow, red, green, blue buttons, you know, kind of like a classic Super NES, or rather a Super Famicom controller, I should say. And it's just a little more portable. It's got all the same features as its bigger cousin, you know, the C-Stick, the better 3D, and all that good stuff. But yeah, the removable faceplates are probably the biggest thing, and a lot of people wanted that, and at last, it is coming.
Yeah, I mean, this model launched alongside the 3DS, the XL size in Japan. But when they came over here, you know, obviously it was that part was missing, much to a lot of people's dismay. The smaller version with the faceplates, and you know, Reggie had said, I think at E3 he had hinted that we'd be getting
the smaller version, and
it's finally arrived. But it's so far it's only in this bundle.
Yeah, it's there's a catch, and that catch is it's only available at GameStop in an Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer bundle that comes out on the 25th of September.
Yeah, and they haven't announced any other replacement faceplates, I don't think, yet.
Not yet, but that's the thing is, you know, they just announced this first one. It is a GameStop exclusive. I don't think they want to like rain on any parades by announcing the other details, but I'm assuming it's going to exist in some other form, whether it's a mass release or another exclusive. But I think there'll just be a regular one or possibly some other kinds of variants over the next few months. I mean, I would, you know, keep our eyes open as we head into the holidays. I wouldn't be surprised to see something new break, you know, maybe just before the Thanksgiving weekend or something like that. But I think there'll be more stuff.
Yeah, and even if they never ramp up to full speed with this model, like if they never have, if you never go into, you know, a GameStop and see a whole, you know, wall of nothing but interchangeable faceplates, there have been plenty released overseas. You can find them online and, you know, decorate your system up however you want.
Yeah, there's been lots of cool ones released over there. I remember seeing some Majora's Mask ones, some Zelda ones that I think I would definitely be interested in if they don't get a domestic release.
Now, did you get you got the new 3DS XL?
Yes.
Yeah, are you tempted? Are you going to get the smaller one as well?
It's highly likely. I'm not going to get this Animal Crossing one because I'm just not that big an Animal Crossing fan.
Also, because the Animal Crossing it comes on it digitally, and I think you and I both love to get the physical copies of the games.
Yeah, that's another good reason. But yeah, I'm certainly looking into that. I mean, back when they announced the new 3DS XL, I think I probably would have held off and not picked it up if they hadn't made that Zelda Special Edition. But that was like, okay, you know, I always seem to end up getting suckered in for the Zelda Special Edition, so I definitely picked that up back when it was available. And speaking of which, there is a new Zelda Special Edition available. This is a new 3DS XL, but unlike the previous one, which was a Majora's Mask one that featured, you know, the Majora's Mask itself, along with, you know, the other you know, character masks, you know, the Zora and the Goron, etc. And instead of showing that stuff, it's just a, you know, big Zelda Triforce logo on a gold new 3DS XL system. Also GameStop exclusive. And coming out in October, I believe. Yeah, October 23rd, to be exact.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool, and the online pre-orders went pretty quickly.
Yes, they did. And I kind of pre-ordered one myself.
They got you with more Zelda special
editions.
Well,
here's the thing that happens. You know, you put up something exclusive, you put up a Nintendo, it's like, don't think, act. And so I just went ahead and I did the pre-order. I can always cancel it later. And I'm probably going to because... you know, they haven't really shown all of what it looks like. They've shown the outside, and I think I like my Majora's Mask one better than the Triforce logo, but I want to see what it looks like when it's opened up. Once we've seen more of it, you know, I'll decide, do I want to waste a couple $100 on another Zelda new 3DS, or am I fine with the one I've got? So I'll see after I find out more, and then I'll decide whether I want to keep it or not, but...
Now, these initial this initial model that sold out very quickly, it didn't come with the new Zelda game Triforce Heroes. Is that correct?
That's correct. It was actually $200. And some people were like, well, how come the new 3DS XL with Zelda is $200, but the smaller model was like $220? And that's because the Animal Crossing one comes with the game, as you mentioned, digital download, whereas the Zelda one does not. So that's why there's the price difference there.
So does the new smaller model that comes with Happy Home Designer, does it come with the NFC like dongle?
No, but this is a new 3DS.
Of course.
Has that functionality built in.
Of course, and it also comes with, I think, maybe just one Amiibo card as well.
That's right, one card.
One card.
You get one card for free, the other $399, you're still going to have to go out there and track down yourself. There are a couple other GameStop exclusives announced. Those are new Wii Remote controllers. Yes, we are still getting Wii Remote controllers 9 years after the Wii is launched. But they're pretty cool. There is a Bowser controller, a Toad controller, and a Yoshi controller. Those are to go along with the Mario, Luigi, and Peach ones that have been available for some time.
I probably have a dozen Wii Remotes at home, but how sad is it that I really want these?
Do you have the Mario and Luigi ones?
I have the Mario one, and I got the Peach one for my daughter.
Oh, come on. You're not getting Luigi? Why are you hating Luigi?
Well, I mean, was he the only other one that had previously been out in the U.S.?
I think so.
Well, it's that thing where, like, I initially got, you know, I wanted to get these, and I wanted an excuse to get them.
I want an excuse to get them, too, but I can't pay $40 for these suckers.
I know. It's ridiculous. I mean, how much do these cost at this point to make? Like a dollar? Yeah. So I bought the Peach one for my daughter, and I was like, okay, that's kind of in the family. That's technically in the family collection
now.
Well,
you have other children. You should get the Luigi for your son.
He's too young to play the games. Maybe if he was older, that
He's
would be a great
He's already a
excuse.
Mario fan.
Yeah, he loves to watch, that's for sure. But then Mario, I think I splurged for some reason on myself. But Luigi is like committing to buying all of the rest of them, so... Maybe that'll happen once we have another big drought. I'll tell you what, if I hadn't spent all this money on all these Amiibos all year, I probably would have them all already.
Yeah, that would make it even more compelling. There is one other exclusive at GameStop, and that is a Photos with Bowser eShop card. Or I guess it's a Photos with Mario Bowser eShop card. But anyway, it's like the Goomba, Princess Peach, and Mario ones that have already existed. You know, you do some augmented reality stuff, and put these characters into your photos. You know, I did one, so it looks like Mario is squashing a Goomba in my toilet. I have to say it turned out pretty well.
Those initial cards, were they Target exclusives?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I know that's where I got mine, but I think I've seen
too.
Them other places.
Okay, I wasn't sure if they'd switched allegiances with the GameStop exclusive here. It's weird that this one lone card would come out.
I know.
It feels like it's been at least a year since the last one.
Yeah,
longer.
Several months at the very least. But yeah, it seems like there should be more. Where's the Luigi card? Where is the, Koopa card? Where's the Toad card?
I mean, I'll get this card because I'd probably end up spending, $10 in the eShop anyway. So it's might as well get the collectible card.
Yeah, sure.
I mean,
I'm always buying more eShop cards. So
yeah.
Sure, might as well. And, he is the big baddie, so it does make sense to add him to the mix. But again, I think the theme for today so far is Luigi is totally getting left out.
I think they have in Japan, by the way, I think they have photos with Animal Crossing character cards now.
Oh.
Yeah, so maybe those will come over again, spread out over the next several years.
Perhaps so. We got some other exciting news recently, and that is that Ace Attorney 6 has been officially revealed and confirmed for the Nintendo 3DS.
That's kind of a relief, because I got the sense that series... was wavering a little bit. I mean, in terms of it, especially as in terms of Western releases, it seemed like they weren't being as put out as confidently as they used to.
Well, that's sort of true and sort of not true. Here's the thing about Ace Attorney 6. This was not a brand new reveal. They actually said quite a long time ago, after the release of, I guess, Ace Attorney 5, they said that the team that made that is going off to make Ace Attorney 6. And Shu Takumi, the original creator of the series, is going off to make a spin-off game, which is Dai Gyakuten Saibon, the one set in like the early 1900s where he meets up with Sherlock Holmes, featuring Phoenix Wright's ancestor. And so we've known that this game was coming, but yes, this is the first time we've really seen it, and they have indeed already confirmed it's coming out in North America. Now, when Ace Attorney 5 was first revealed, the same thing kind of happened. Said, yes, it's coming out here, but then ended up being digital only. And they haven't said anything about Ace Attorney 6. You know, we know that it did certainly live up to expectations, for a digital release. But does that mean that this one's going to be digital, or they decide, yeah, it's worth doing a package version? You know, we don't know at this point. And I guess we'll probably just have to wait and find out. Regardless, the game is looking pretty cool so far. We know that it's set in some, I think, fictitious Asian country where there's, you know, some sort of, you know, paranormal stuff going on. We know that Phoenix is, of course, the main character. He's right there in the logo, pointing like always. They haven't shown too much else. Don't know if Athena's going to be back or Apollo's going to be back, but I hope so. I really love those characters. The game is going to be at TGS, which is only a couple weeks away. So I look forward to seeing more then.
Yeah, I'd forgotten TGS was sneaking up on us. Hopefully we'll get a lot of other cool new game announcements as well.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
But Nintendo traditionally doesn't show there, I don't think.
Right, Nintendo isn't there. It's all up to third parties. You know, it's been, you know, over the last few years, seems like it's been getting a little bit smaller. But yeah, I look forward to seeing whatever they got.
Mm-hmm.
Some other cool news recently is that it looks like Nintendo has teamed up with Amazon to create a online digital storefront at that popular retailer. You know, it's supposed to be super easy to get downloadable games that way. You know, just buy it with your Amazon account, click through to your Nintendo Network account, and then supposedly the content will be sent directly to your Nintendo device, your Wii U, your 3DS, just boom, just like that.
So you don't have to go through the eShop storefront at all then?
That is what they're saying. I mean, I haven't tried it out, but, you know, there's plenty of stuff on there. There's, you know, full-size digital releases. There are, you know, the digital-only games, smaller stuff like, you know, the recent Dr. Mario game. And, of course, there's also Virtual Console stuff as well.
How much of the library is it? Do you know if it's everything or a select, you know, titles?
Well, it's hard to tell. I haven't checked extensively, but it does seem like it's just part of the library. It wasn't everything. You know, one of the things I checked on this morning was if the new Versus Excitebike game was on there, and I did not see that. You know, that was a game we talked about last week, by the way. You know, we thought it was going to be out last week. It is out now. If you're looking forward to that, now you can check it out. But yeah, when I checked this morning, you couldn't buy it through Amazon, at least.
You know, but when I first...
It's a start.
When I first got wind of this announcement, my first thought was similar to what I thought about when I, you know, found out initially that you could buy digital titles through, you know, GameStop.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that, you know, why would you? I mean, why is this exciting? Why is this a thing? I guess the whole idea of buying a digital title through GameStop is you could theoretically just pay in cash if you wanted to. You don't necessarily have to have a credit card,
mm-hmm.
which you would need to go through the eShop.
Well, I mean, I never use a credit card in the eShop. I always go out and get the eShop cards and, you know, just plug that number in. But this, you know, should eliminate a step.
Yeah, and it seems like, I mean, I could probably fire up my computer, go to Amazon, and, you know, I'm always automatically logged in. I'm a Prime member, mm-hmm. and it's fast and easy for me to navigate Amazon and find stuff that I want and buy it. I could probably go through that process faster than I could load up the eShop, which is pretty slow, especially on a 3DS, and find stuff that way. You know, and the eShop can be tough to navigate. So, maybe that's not necessarily just a cool additional way, but maybe that could become the new standard way. I buy eShop titles.
Yeah, if they make, you know, all their stuff available that way, I could definitely see that happening.
Yeah. I wonder if they'll branch out and do this with other partners as well, not just Amazon.
Well, I mean, certainly you can do it, you know, through like GameStop's website as well. So this isn't, you know, a brand new thing. But yeah, it could be that they're just continuing to expand.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty cool. I don't do a lot of digital buying. You know, I always prefer the physical copy when I can, but it's increasingly becoming a digital world. It's tempting to go that route when it's this convenient.
Mm-hmm. So, what were you doing this past Saturday night?
Well, actually, Saturday night, I think I spent pretty much all of it trying to get through the lost levels again. What about you?
I was at a highfalutin Legend of Zelda concert here in San Francisco. This is the Symphony of the Goddess concert. You know, they've been running these for a few years. And so I went there with some friends and took in the classical musical stylings of an orchestra presenting some of my favorite themes from The Legend of Zelda.
How did it go?
It was pretty neat. It was a lot of fun. This is actually the third time I've been to it. You know, they started out doing it several years ago, maybe I want to say like 3 or 4 years ago. Then they did an updated version that I think was called Second Quest. And now this is the third iteration called Master Quest. And you know, the heart of the Symphony of the Goddess is four different movements, as they call them, you know, based around the music from different Zelda games. One of them is Link to the Past, one is Wind Waker, one is Ocarina of Time, and the last is Twilight Princess. And those make up the heart of the performance. But aside from that, in each of the different versions of the symphony, they do additional performances as well. This time, there was more stuff from Majora's Mask. There were two distinct Majora's Mask pieces, actually. There was a performance of the Gerudo Valley, which is one of my all-time favorite Zelda pieces. There was a compilation, a medley, I should say, of boss music, and of course, a medley of just your main Zelda themes, your overworld themes, from the original game and Ocarina, and a couple others. Overall, it was a fun performance. There were a couple of folks there with some really good cosplay. There was someone dressed up as the purple bunny dude from A Link Between Worlds, and another one dressed up as a Loftwing, who unfortunately would not give me a ride on his back. That was unfortunate. Not as many Links and Zeldas. Usually when I go to these, I see lots of Links and Zeldas, but this time it was the Loftwing and the rabbit guy who really stood out.
Now, when I think of going to see classical music, I think of a very reserved, very quiet kind of crowd. Is that the case here, or do you get do cheers ringing out when they hear their favorite tunes? Or
this one was, I think, a little more reserved from some of the other ones I've been to in the past. It seemed like a song would start, and as soon as people recognized, oh, this is one of my favorites, they would just start, cheering and hollering like at a rock concert or something. In this one, though, they would tend to save all the applause until after the actual, performance was done, the actual, that one song. But, there was still a lot of, applause and hooting and yelling when it was at appropriate times. But it was certainly all kinds of people there. Some people are just showing up in jeans and a t-shirt. Some people are getting on their fancy gowns and stuff.
Any tingles?
Not this time that I noticed. Like I said, the cosplay seemed to be a little toned down from sometimes.
Is there a visual element? Are they playing like scenes from the games on a screen or something?
Yes, exactly. The entire time they are playing footage from the games.
So it sounds similar to when they actually. I believe this. They started doing this, or maybe they even announced this at an E3 when they were kind of showing, having a big look at Skyward Sword. And I remember they started off one of their E3 press conferences, back when they did press conferences, with, I guess, a smaller version of the symphony playing live music at that press conference while we watched scenes from classic games that ended with Link and Zelda on the Loftwings. And that was the first look at that scene from the game.
Huh, I totally don't remember that, but sure, I'll take your word for it.
Anyway, my point is, I got, without realizing it, I had a small kind of Zelda symphonic experience that was maybe gave me a little piece of what you got to see.
Yeah. And speaking of little pieces of this thing, there's actually going to be a toned down, sort of micro version of this concert at the Nintendo World Store this Friday. I think it just has, a few of the instruments and performers there. It's not the full-blown thing, but that's going to be happening. And of course, this tour is still ongoing. There's going to be other Zelda symphonies in a number of cities. It's going to be coming to Durham, North Carolina, St. Louis, Missouri, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Providence, Rhode Island, and Chicago in the next several weeks. There's going to be a whole bunch of performances put on in countries throughout Europe. And they're actually going to be back here in the Bay Area in San Jose in December. So if you're interested in this stuff, there are plenty of opportunities. You can go to their website and see if there's one near you and check it out.
That's really cool. I never would have expected that it would have gone on this long, beyond the initial run. And I think that year, they were really promoting Skyward Sword, and this was kind of tied into that. Maybe it even been in a Zelda anniversary year.
Skyward Sword did come out on the 25th anniversary.
Yeah.
And they actually include with that game a Zelda Symphonic CD.
Right.
And I think that was probably from the very first performance they did, which I think it was either in Japan or maybe it was in Seattle. But it tended to be a standalone thing, but it was so popular, I think they ended up making it into, sort of a concert series that's been going on for years now. And it continues to evolve. And if you like good, high quality video game music and you want to pretend you have a little bit of class, totally worthwhile.
I'm really looking forward to when they finally bring out the new Zelda for Wii U or NX or whatever it's going to be, to hear if they actually did any symphonic recordings for it, because they seem to have gone like full symphonic for the Mario titles, at least the 3D Mario titles.
Oh yeah.
And you know, if you're talking about building the biggest Zelda world ever, how can you not, you know, have some orchestrated you know, tracks? That'd be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be cool. The one thing that wasn't awesome about this performance is that when I went to the second quest, they had a really, really amazing medley from Link's Awakening, but that was not present in this one, nor was it present in the first one, and I wish they would bring that back, or even better, you know, put it on a CD so I can listen to it anytime that I want to.
Mm.
Heard there's some news from the world of Pokemon that you were kind of excited about.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily up my alley, but Pokemon Shuffle, which I actually did, you know, play at least a couple hours on my 3DS.
That's is, the match three puzzle game.
Right, the free to start. as Mystery Wada would have said. Free
That's
to
right.
Start.
My bad, my bad.
Is, yeah, now on iPhones and Android phones.
Mm-hmm.
Or rather iOS. I suppose you could play it on your iPads as well. Yeah, so, you know, Pokemon's, it's not, you know, definitely not the first kind of app they've put out there for phones.
Yeah, I mean, we should point out that this has nothing to do with, you know, Nintendo's mobile gaming initiative. The Pokemon
right.
Company has their own separate thing.
Well, the, and
this
a lot of people
the first Pokemon game out there.
A lot of people might not realize Pokemon is an entirely different company from Nintendo. Mm-hmm. I mean, technically, I mean, they are a third party, even though they've only ever really put things on Nintendo handhelds and consoles. So, you know, they make
they're
their
third
own
party-ish. It's so weird,
yeah.
Their whole relationship. But yeah, it's not the same.
The
thing
point is, they make their own decisions.
Yes.
You know, they don't necessarily adhere to Nintendo policy when it comes to things like, you know, what their plans are for smartphones, like mm-hmm. you said.
Well, I'm not super excited about that, I have to admit, but I am excited about some new Nendoroid toys that went up for pre-order recently. Now, I had seen these before at some. You know, toy shows over in Japan or Asia, and I was looking forward to it. But this morning, I noticed that pre-orders were up on a lot of sites. Just last week, we were talking about the Majora's Mask Link Nendoroid, but there is also a Mega Man Nendoroid and a Kirby Nendoroid that is joining that lineup. And I have to say, both of them look pretty neat to me. Mega Man has you know, interchangeable hands. You know, obviously, you can have his regular hand or you can have the Buster. He has, you know, changeable face plates, comes with, you know, some projectile effects, comes with an E-tank. You know, like the other Nendoroids, it's, you know, super deformed style, so it kind of looks like the version from Mega Man Powered Up, which is, you know, PSP game, not a Nintendo game, but still.
Cutesy style.
Yeah, but still, it's Mega Man. And then the other one is Kirby, and you can't really do an SD Kirby because Kirby is Kirby. What are you going to do to him? You can't make him any more cute. It's impossible to make a cuter Kirby, I think. And, you know, he works really well. Just kind of looks like normal Kirby, which is great. He has different faces. He has his regular happy face. He has an open mouth for, you know, pretending he's sucking up an enemy. Then he has what I call the American face, which is his angry eyebrows. and then he's got accessories so he can be, you know, flame attack Kirby or sword Kirby. And it's a pretty neat little collectible. You know, both of those, like I said, have been up for pre-order. I will again plug the site that I usually buy the stuff at, which is BigBadToyStore.com, but there are lots of places where you'll be able to buy them.
Now, are Nintendoroids a Japanese toy line?
Yes.
Yeah, so just kind of like high quality, like figurines, posable toys.
And yeah, and it covers all kinds of stuff. There are, you know, video game characters, there are anime characters. You know, obviously, you know, this one here is Nintendo, one is Capcom.
Are they all called Nendoroids, or is Nendoroids a play off Nintendo?
No, they're all called Nendoroids, not Nintendoroids or anything like that, which sounds like a horrible disease to come down with, by
the way.
So it's
like, if you played too much Mario, you may have gotten Nintendoroids.
But yeah, Nendoroids.
Speaking of playing too much of something, Xenoblade.
Huh?
Xenoblade Chronicles X. We were talking about this the other day. There's a special edition, which you ordered, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, we knew about this a few weeks or months ago. They said there was going to be a special edition of the game. And then, you know, we just had PAX Prime a couple of days ago, and they had a panel where they were talking all about, you know, Xenoblade Chronicles X, and they confirmed what the contents of that special edition is going to be. There is a 100-page art book, I believe, a fancy art card, and a custom-made USB stick that has 10 songs from the soundtrack. Of course, there's also, you know, like, the game's in there, obviously, and there's a custom slipcase packaging for all that stuff as well. And it showed up on Amazon for $90. They said it's going to be available at select retailers, but I don't think it's shown up anywhere else yet, as far as I know. But, I really like the original Xenoblade Chronicles. And, I did jump on that as soon as I saw it, and I'm looking forward to that quite a bit.
I'm looking forward to the game. I took a pass on this set. I don't know why. I guess just because maybe if it had been for like a new Zelda game or a new Mario game, I would have had to have done it.
Well, that's the thing that I don't understand is that Nintendo can't seem to figure out this whole special edition thing. I mean, I'm really happy about this. It is, it seems like a really cool game. It's something I'm looking forward to. And it's got, really the kind of things I want in a special edition. But it's like, why are they doing it for this, but they don't do it for, their Mario games or their Zelda games? I guess they have done it, for Zelda in, some limited ways. They had the Wind Waker version that came with the Ganondorf figurine and the really limited Majora's Mask one that came with the Skull Kid figurine. But, that's all those came with. It didn't come with, music or a behind-the-scenes making of or an art book or anything like that. And then sometimes they do, like with Hyrule Warriors, like, oh, here's a special edition, but guess what? It's only available at the Nintendo World Store. There's only a couple of them that we made. If you haven't lined up 15 days in advance and stood around the block until you almost died, you're not going to get one. Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, people are most fanatical about Mario, and I think for something like this, especially Zelda. And you know what? Mm-hmm. I would be much more... What would interest me personally much more is, I mean, art books are nice, but... You know, what I really like is I was just reading that, the book that comes with Mario Maker, mm-hmm. It's not a special edition, it comes with every copy of the game.
Right.
And it's just meant to show you some images of wacky things you can put together in your game, basically like an inspiration book. Here are some mm-hmm. ideas you could try. But apparently I read that it also has pages in there that show kind of the movement patterns of some of the original enemies in this first Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, it's got some behind-the-scenes stuff, basically.
Yeah, it's got some level design sketches. You mm-hmm. can see what the thought process was from those guys when they made the very first Mario Brothers game. So that kind of stuff fascinates me. I mean, it's not just, art, but it's, like, historical and gives you a deeper insight into these series that you love. So, I really like what they did with Xenoblade Chronicles X. It's definitely a step in the right direction with that special edition, but I'd love to see them go even deeper and do stuff that's a little bit more directly related to the content than simply, an art card or, I guess, seeing all the conceptual art in the book is kind of neat, but I don't know, maybe I'm just being picky.
Oh, no, it's the kind of stuff I really like. The only thing I would really add to it is some sort of, making of behind the scenes, documentary type of thing, like we've seen, done with other companies' special editions. I think Nintendo could do a lot more with that. I think people would totally buy it up. The Xenoblade one, I think, it was available online for, a couple of hours on Amazon. It went pretty quick. The Majora's Mask one went super fast, but I feel like they're leaving money on the table by not trying to do more of this stuff.
Yeah. I do like for that Xenoblade Special Edition that they didn't include a bunch of, exclusive or timed exclusive DLC as part of the package. Because a lot of times that stuff just comes off as feeling very, not very special. It's like, here's an extra blue leg brace for your character, or, here's a wacky hat you'd never actually want to see your character in. It's at least nice that they focus more on the physical stuff and more collectability.
I suppose that's true. Well, speaking of cool stuff out of PAX, did you hear the news about the Shovel Knight amiibo?
Of course. It had been rumored for days. In fact, a lot of people thought that, because there had been, I guess, some sightings of the Shovel Knight amiibo, that this meant the character was coming to Smash.
Well, it is real, and it is spectacular.
But not coming to Smash. At least, who knows what the future
holds.
Not
as far as we know. I mean, it's still possible. But, it's a standalone amiibo, and it's actually, created, manufactured by Yacht Club Games, not by Nintendo. So this is a first.
Yeah, Nintendo basically said, here, we'll let you guys do it. From what they've explained, Nintendo did oversee it. They had discussions with Nintendo about some of the content. A representative from Yacht Club Games was even quoted as saying that Miyamoto turned down one or two of, or personally turned down one or two of the content unlockable ideas that they had. But ultimately what they arrived at was pretty significant. You can unlock
multiplayer. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Yeah. It has a cooperative multiplayer mode that unlocks exclusively in the Wii U version. Apparently, I guess, you know, when you have this amiibo, you create a custom character because you can level up as you defeat enemies and acquire treasures and get new abilities through the relics in the game, you know, new powers, even change the look of the character. So that all sounds, you know, pretty darn significant. You'll be able to, you know, then transfer this, you know, customized character into the 3DS game somehow, not for co-op, but he'll still be doing something there. And there are going to be even amiibo-based challenges. So, yeah, that's a lot of stuff. And they promised, hey, he's going to be usable in future games as well. You know, that probably means, you know, when they do get around to Shovel Knight 2 or something like that, he'll be there. But who knows? Maybe it does mean something like, you know, it'll be usable in Smash Brothers or something. Who the heck knows?
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him at the very least have like a pixel sprite costume in Mario Maker. But it's maybe a little bit too late for that, I'm sure.
I suppose, but, you know, there's always DLC or something.
Yeah. That's I mean, that's super cool, and I love Shovel Knight. And I'm especially excited because the Plague Knight DLC is about to come out soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was another thing. They showed a lot about that. That looks pretty darn cool. It looks like it's going to, you know, change up the gameplay quite a bit, the way that the Plague Knight has all these, you know, sort of aerial abilities. He can sort of hop and hover through the air. It's probably going to change the way you play the game a lot. He's got all these, you know, different kinds of bombs to throw out. And even some of the stuff they showed is like, you know, there's levels I don't remember playing through and enemies I definitely didn't fight against. That's a pretty hefty amount of content for a free update.
Yeah. I mean, I think for the most part, they've kept all the same levels, but they have gone in and added little bits here and there, especially as pertains to tailoring the game to feel more like a proper fit. When, you know, I read kind of a developer's diary on the creation of the Plague Knight campaign, and one of the things they really focused on was making sure that he really felt true to his prior appearance as a boss in the game, that he felt, you know, when you controlled him, he felt a little wild and slightly out of control, and that it didn't just feel like they'd slapped another skin on Shovel Knight.
And that's not the end. There's still a lot more expanded content for Shovel Knight coming down the road. So, you know, big kudos to Yacht Club Games for that.
Yeah, gotta love those long-term stretch goals from the original Kickstarter.
Yep.
They'll be locked into making stuff for this game for years.
There is one more bit of news out of PAX I wanted to touch on, and that was about the fifth annual unofficial Pokemon PAX kickoff party. That was, you know, as the name implies, a fan event that, you know, was not supported by the Pokemon Company. It's going to involve, you know, some playing games, some having drinks, and the Pokemon Company decided, no way, guys, you are using RIPs, because they put Pikachu and Snivy on the poster. And Pokemon's like, oh, no, you are not doing that. And they issued a you know, statement from their lawyers and said, you are going to stop this. We are going to sue you. We are going to get damages. You know, you were charging $2 for a ticket, and we are going to put an end to that. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, harp on this too much, but I was just bringing it up to say the moral to the story is, do not mess with the Pokemon Company. Well, that's quite a bit of news. So we're going to take a little bit of an intermission, and when we come back, we'll talk about the rise and fall of Konami. All right, we are back, and we are here to talk about one of my all-time favorite third-party developers, publishers, that is Konami. And that might sound like kind of a weird topic, maybe to some people, especially people that have just gotten into, you know, Nintendo gaming in the last, you know, several years. But there's a couple of reasons we're bringing that up. One of them being that Konami used to be totally awesome. The other being that as we are recording this, Konami has just released Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain. And, of course, that is not on Nintendo systems. It is on Sony and Microsoft and PC platforms. No Nintendo love, I'm afraid. But the reason that that's important is because it's kind of looking like this might be the last noteworthy game that Konami ever makes.
Yeah, because they had a very headline grabbing falling out with Hideo Kojima, the mm-hmm. The man behind Metal Gear.
Sure,
and really
did.
Their last named big name developer.
Yeah, so, I mean, over the last several years, we've just seen all sorts of people leaving Konami. Iga, the guy behind all these great Castlevania games on the GBA and the DS, he got Castlevania taken away from him, and then he left and went on to fund a very popular record-setting Kickstarter, which is coming to Nintendo systems.
Mm, Bloodstained.
Mm-hmm. And lots of other creators just leaving the company. The development teams they have behind a lot of great games just don't exist anymore. And it's really come down just this trickle of software. And I remember going to E3 2 years ago, and this was the second day of the show. This wasn't like I just got there on the first day and things hadn't quite been set up yet. But I went over to Konami's booth on the second day of the show, and it was like a ghost town. It was like they hadn't even bothered to set up yet. There was just like nobody there. It was just this big empty space. And it was just so sad because I used to love Konami so much.
They were a very prolific game publisher back in the 8 and 16-bit era. Mm-hmm. And then going into PS1 and PS2 continued pretty strong and, mm-hmm. and developed more big franchises. But in recent years, it's pretty much just been Metal Gear and maybe the occasional Silent Hill. And they had
they've been doing their soccer games. I think they've still been doing some Yu-Gi-Oh! And then they have Metal Gear. But they used to have this vast library of IPs that they haven't been doing much with lately.
And the titles are few and far between. And mm-hmm.
and plus, the other things that we've been hearing are these stories saying they've been treating employees badly. People aren't allowed to go online to check the internet during work hours and stuff.
Well, that's what was reported specifically with regards to Kojima Productions, because mm-hmm. Since they essentially fired Hideo Kojima months and months ago, but have kept him on under some kind of new contract position mm-hmm. To finish Metal Gear Solid 5. Mm-hmm. He and his whole team are basically just if we're to believe what we've read online, had security guards basically standing there watching them finish their work.
Yeah,
because they're afraid. I guess that Kojima might poach the entire team and take them with him when he's done, mm-hmm. Or that they might, steal company secrets or whatever.
But then there's also been talk of how, some people that used to be developers, we don't want you developing games anymore. We want you to go clean the Konami gym or something like that. So they're forced to do this, manual labor type stuff instead of, developing games. And I don't know how true that is, but we can certainly say that Konami's gotten away from the games that made them, so great so many years ago, and now they're focusing on, pachinko machines and stuff for the most part. They even put out a trailer recently for a new Castlevania one that's all about erotic violence.
Now, no matter
it's what it's said anyway.
We're hearing a lot of this, obviously, we weren't a fly on the wall for any of the stuff that's happened.
Right. This is just, reports we're hearing online.
And it should be.
Except for the fact that we know that their output has significantly decreased.
Right. And it's from what we've heard, maybe they had very good reason to be concerned about Kojima. I mean, Kojima, from a player's perspective, is the greatest guy you could hope for helming your next favorite game, because apparently money is no object to him, and he'll do whatever it takes and take all longer.
Well, he was like a vice president of the company, so he had a lot of control.
He did, and he would put whatever he needed into a game. But
and
apparently,
I certainly appreciate that.
Mm-hmm, but apparently, there are financial realities, and you can't develop games with endless budgets for any endless number of years. So who knows what the direct nature of that was. But getting around to saying, no matter where you fall on kind of the side there, or even what you think of them turning focus to things like pachinko machines, I mean, if that's maybe that's a great business for them.
Yeah, I mean, it might be better to see that than see what happens, with Sega, where, they're just a horrible, puny shell of their former selves. At least Konami had some sort of fallback plan.
So I'll even assume, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and say maybe there's solid financial reasons.
Solid financial reasons.
for for their new Focus. But I think you'd have to agree, everyone would have to agree.
What's a Hind D doing here?
That they have horribly mismanaged IP, that if they had been nurtured and kept well in the way that Nintendo has brought its IP along through the generations and evolved those franchises and kept them fresh and relevant and popular, then there's no way it wouldn't have still been, even if they want to do other business ventures now, it would have been great if they'd managed these properly along the way, and if Contra and Castlevania and Silent Hill and Suikoden and all these classic franchises, even some stuff that in the 16-bit era, as long ago as that, still seemed viable, like Sparkster and things.
Yeah, it's nothing short of tragic what's happened.
Yeah, if they'd kept that fresh, then, they'd have another great business to continue profiting from.
But that's why, I wanted to bring it up. That's why I wanted it to be our topic of discussion, was because, back during those golden years of the NES, the Super NES, man, Konami was such an amazing company. And like I said, if you've only been into this stuff for, a handful of years, you might not realize that they used to be like a powerhouse. That, if you saw the Konami logo on the box, you're like, yes, I know something's going to be special here. And, a minute or two ago, I said, the golden era. I should have called it the silver era, because, back then, Konami had these signature silver NES box with these stripes along the sides. And, you would see that box in the store, and you'd just be like, oh, wow, I know this game is going to be cool. I have to check out the back of the box. I have to buy this game. I have to rent this game. I have to try it one way or another, because I know that this means something really, really cool is inside.
Yeah, because the quality across all their games was usually so consistently high. Mm-hmm. The Konami brand itself is what sold those games. Like, I remember getting...
it was always great developers, great gameplay.
I can't remember how many games I got just because of that silver box. I got Jackal and, Biobilly wasn't their finest work.
But well, I'll start with Gradius. Gradius was, I believe, their first game to come out on the NES in North America back all the way in 86, 29
space
years
shooter,
ago.
Classic side-scrolling space shooter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was the one where you were able to acquire power-ups and then, decide what, new ability you wanted to give your ship, whether it was a laser or the option things that trailed behind you and provide extra shots, or whether it was a missile or even a defensive shield. And, then from there, we went to, all kinds of great games. Like you were saying, Jackal and Russian Attack were ones that were kind of one-offs. But then we had Contra, which is one of my all-time favorite games. It set the standard for run and gun. It had that fantastic, two-player co-op that was so much fun to play with a friend and, try to get through, these, 8 levels with all these alien soldiers coming after you.
It's probably also the most famous use of the classic Konami code.
Oh, yeah.
And even if people don't necessarily know Konami's games, a lot of people today still know about that code.
Yep.
And, that's just, back on the NES, if you put yourself, in the mindset of what it was really like back then, Contra was about as big a brand as it got. Everybody knew Contra. Everybody played Contra. Everybody loved Contra.
This is true.
And even
it was featured in the very first issue of Nintendo Power.
Yeah, and even into the SNES era, Contra was still a big name. So the idea that nobody really knows or cares about Contra today, except for people who played it back then, is just another example of how poorly, Konami brought its franchises along.
Mm-hmm. But, it wasn't just that. It was, Castlevania, of course.
My favorite Konami series.
It started
after Metal Gear.
Yeah, started with the original, and then we had Simon's Quest, which, of course, was infamous for that Nintendo Power cover as well as for, some of its ridiculous puzzles. How insane is it that aside from having these super obtuse puzzles that they decided, they're like, having really complicated puzzles that you'll never figure out, it's not hard enough. We're going to put fake hints in throughout this game, and we'll just, have all kinds of BS that you'll try to just, try this tip, and ha, 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 it didn't work because it was just a lie.
It was the ultimate troll game.
It was.
It lied to you. It had puzzles you'd never be able to figure out unless you read Nintendo Power.
Mm-hmm. It was still a great game, though, that went on to have a third installment on the NES as well, which was
that
very,
might be
very
my
good.
Favorite Castlevania game, Castlevania III Dracula's Curse.
Well, that's what, Koji Igarashi, Iga, that's what he said was his favorite.
Man, great minds think alike.
And, then from there, they went on to make, some fantastic stuff on the Super NES. They continued those same franchises. with Contra 3 and Super Castlevania 4. And then
I just got to say Contra 3 is by far my favorite Contra. Grabbing onto those flying missiles and like shooting while you're hanging onto rockets. And
it's like the manliest game ever.
It was just so over the top. It was like they took kind of the popular 80s action movie tropes of the time, like Rambo and things like that, and just turned it up to 1,000.
Mm-hmm. Well, how cool is it that, on the original Contra box, the two dudes that are, shirtless attacking aliens were basically Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone.
Right, yeah, the artist very obviously took their likenesses.
And then, of course, all those years later, we had that poster in Nintendo Power where, for Contra 4, where not only did they have Stallone and Schwarzenegger looks-alikes, but they also had, like, a Vin Diesel look-alike and a Wesley Snipes look-alike. And that, yeah, I love that poster.
Contra 4 was awesome, too, by the way.
It's too bad it didn't really have that four-player mode. We're getting ahead of ourselves here because, like I was saying, they were a huge powerhouse.
You were saying Contra on the SNES was amazing, but yes. Also Castlevania on the SNES. I remember not only was it an overall great game, but I don't know how long I spent just like jerking that little whip around that you can carry.
Well, also, it was one of those first games that made really awesome use of Mode 7.
Mm-hmm. Great spooky soundtrack.
But it had like that rotating, those two kinds of rotating rooms. One that was looked like you were in the inside of a barrel, where it was rotating around and around and around. And the other one, the whole room actually did rotate, and you had to use that multi-directional whip to grab on to a latch point and hang on there as the room spun around.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite SNES games. I mean, and even stuff that didn't continue on, and maybe it wasn't the best. I'd have to kind of go back and play it again, like Sparks to the Rocket Knight and things like that. I still don't really remember enjoying. And the thing about Konami is you knew you were always going to get the best graphics, really good gameplay, and also, especially on the NES, some of the best music.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is they had these really, really established trademarks that you knew you were getting something amazing. Like I said, that silver box, it meant it's going to have this great, Konami sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they could really get some bass out of those cartridges that nobody else seemed to be able to do.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a special chip or what, but for some reason, it seemed like they were able to get more out of the NES's sound processor than anybody else. Mm-hmm. It probably didn't even have a sound processor, did it?
The little sound gerbil.
But sound capabilities or whatever than anybody else was able to.
Yeah.
Mystical Ninja, Goemon, as it's known in Japan, or Legend of the Mystical Ninja, as it was called here sometimes. That one was really, really fun, just crazy action, silly, goofy characters, but also had really, really tight gameplay and a lot of RPG elements. And one of my all-time favorite ones is Axlay, which was a space shooter that divided up the action between these side-scrolling stages and these pseudo 3D stages before 3D graphics were really a thing. It wasn't polygonal like Star Fox, but it used these special graphic effects to make it look like you were zooming into the screen, and it was just so much fun. You could change weapons on the fly. It has this awesome lava monster boss at the end of stage 5. Like anytime I end up talking about this game, I have to dig up this a screenshot that I took like I don't know how many years ago of this lava boss, and just like, yep, gotta include the lava boss in this article because he's like the best boss I ever remember encountering. And the other thing I loved about Konami is they were able to take these licensed properties and make them into really, really, really good games.
They and Capcom back then, just because it was a licensed game didn't mean it was going to be crap. A lot of them were great.
Yeah, I mean, licensed games always have this, horrible reputation. But if you look at Konami, you might think otherwise. They weren't just pumping out crap like TNC Surf Design or Friday the 13th, but really, really good stuff. And, of course, one of the most memorable was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on the NES. Now, I'm not going to say that one wasn't a bad game. I did not enjoy that one personally, but I remember back in the day that it was like on the top of the Nintendo Power charts for several months, and I didn't really understand because all the people I talked to, they're like, I can't stand this game. I mean, a lot of that is just because it was super, super infuriatingly difficult.
Yeah, I fondly remember that game much more so than a lot of people do, and I think part of that might be Stockholm Syndrome because at that point I was playing games for Game Players Magazine. And I had to beat it. Like, they would assign you a game that you would have to play, and you'd have to videotape yourself beating it all the way through to the end, so that the professional writers could come along and use the tape to help them write the articles. And So I remember, you'd encounter things like that, really infuriating underwater level. We have to defuse the bombs, or that little spot at the top of a platform in one of the levels where it looked like you had to jump over it.
But if you jump, you always fall. The trick was to not jump, just walk over the gap.
Yeah. So many annoying things like that. But
and the part where you have to throw out the rope, and the trick to that is just to walk up to the edge like you're going to fall, like you're just going to walk off the edge of the pit, and then you'll put out the rope automatically, you'll walk across it. But if you try jumping, you die.
Yeah, just crazy leaps in logic. But at the time, I was a big fan of the Turtles comics. Not so much the cartoon, but I love the original comics. And so I was super excited to play it. And again, it sounded great. It looked great. And I was just, Konami could do no wrong. So I was all into it. And then when I finally beat it, and then I had to go back and beat it again for like a strategy game tape we were doing. And I think...
love the term game tapes.
I think maybe... in beating Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, your brain releases like a wealth of endorphins that just makes you forget how terribly difficult it was. That was definitely a landmark game, good or bad.
Well, I wouldn't endorse that one, but I loved pretty much all the other Turtles games. Now, I talked about the Game Boy One Fall of the Foot Clan a few weeks ago. I loved the Ninja Turtles arcade game, which ended up getting ported to the NES, as well as the Manhattan Project, which was TMNT 3. And then TMNT 4, Turtles in Time, was on the Super NES, and it was a port of the arcade game, but they added in extra levels and characters, and it was actually better on the Super NES than it was in arcades. And it was just so, so good. And the thing is, I was not a Ninja Turtles fan. Most of these properties that Konami worked on, they weren't games weren't properties I really cared about, but they made me care about Ninja Turtles because the games were so darn good.
Yeah.
They made me care about Tiny Toon Adventures because of Buster Bust Loose on the Super NES, which had this awesome wall-climbing play mechanic. And I trust that the actual cartoon had a lot of the goofy parody stuff that made it into the game as well. But, I didn't really watch the cartoon, but I loved playing the game. And, I think it's a rare ability for a developer to make you care about a property just because of how great the game is.
Mm-hmm. And back to Turtles for a second, I believe that was the first game Konami released under the Ultra brand as well.
No, it definitely was not.
Oh, it wasn't?
I'm glad you brought that up, though, because that was the thing, is that back in the day, Nintendo had a rule that you could only release so many games a year because they didn't want people pumping out crap. And so Konami was like, well, we have a lot of really good games that we want to get out there, and how they get around it, they made a second label called Ultra. And yes, Ninja Turtles was one of those, but before that, for sure, they did this little game called Metal Gear.
Mm. Also, Metal Gear was the first.
I don't know if it was the first, but I remember it distinctly being under the Ultra branding, and I'm sure you'll remember this too, is the ads they had for that game.
Oh my God.
Like in the magazines and the comic books. And we didn't know that Metal Gear was about a walking tank. What we knew is that the ad said Metal Gear and showed all of this military gear. Just like, here, look at all this stuff you can acquire, all these weapons.
Rows and rows of it. And back then...
Yeah, like gas masks and binoculars and night vision goggles and hand grenades. And all this stuff looked so cool.
And back then, you didn't really accrue gear in games. So, like, you might pick up a power-up that would give you some kind of temporary thing.
But a little bit. I mean, Metroid, you sort of... Zelda you did.
But it was still rare enough that when you said, look, night vision goggles, rocket launcher, and like all this stuff spread over the page, you just looked at it and went, wow, I get to use all that in a video game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that made it seem so, so, so cool. And
that
of course,
ad sold me on the game.
Mm-hmm. It didn't quite sell me on the game, but it made me pretty darn excited about it, even if I didn't go out and buy it. Of course, it's hilarious that Hideo Kojima famously hates the NES version of the game because he made it on the MSX originally, and then someone else ported it over. And as he likes to point out, the final boss in the game, you don't even fight the Metal Gear. You just like set a bomb on a computer and blow up the computer. But I guess the NES was not able to make a big walking tank boss like the MSX was, and so they had to change it.
Yeah. It wasn't until...
But we didn't know any better, and for a lot of NES players... it was a fantastic game. It definitely introduced everyone in the U.S. to the series, and that was the only Metal Gear that anybody knew until Metal Gear Solid came out on PlayStation.
Yeah, and I'd argue, you had such a small worldwide audience for the MSX, which never even released over here.
Yeah.
That Metal Gear really owes its popularity, or at least the start of its popularity, to that NES version,
inferior
or not.
Well, in the United States, it totally is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Metal Gear, as much as it's not with PlayStation now, it used to be, you know, an NES title for everybody that was into that stuff.
Mm-hmm. They released a sequel that wasn't done by Kojima. And
that's right.
He doesn't consider it to be a part of canon, but Snake's Revenge.
Yeah, it is not a part of official series continuity, but yes. Yep, Snake's Revenge came out here as the sequel. I don't know if I ever played that. Do you remember much about it?
I kind of have this vague memory. I mean, I beat it back in the day, but, you know, we're talking, what, at this point, 25, 30 years ago or something. I have this vague memory of having bigger graphics than the original Metal Gear. And, I mean, I liked it at the time. I mean, back then, I've told you this before, but I didn't have much of a concept that games could be bad anyway. It wasn't until Deadly Towers that dawned on me, because every game was so new and you hadn't seen a lot of those play styles before. So I was just into all of it. And so, you know, I remember enjoying it. You know, I hope that doesn't offend Mr. Kojima if he ever happens to hear this.
Well, at any rate, you know, they had lots and lots of good stuff back in the day on the NES and the Super NES and even on the Game Boy. You know, when it came to, you know, Nintendo platforms, that sort of kind of started to die out a bit with the N64. I mean, like with most companies, they, you know, the third-party support just kind of dried up. But then with GameCube, they actually, you know, came back and had a bit of a collaboration with Nintendo, which is another reason why, you know, they're such a notable company in Nintendo's history. You know, not only did Konami decide to, you know, partner with Nintendo and Silicon Knights to make an exclusive remake of Metal Gear Solid, but they also teamed up to make DDR Mario Mix. So even while, you know, some of the third-party relationships were kind of rocky, they were still working very closely with Nintendo to bring these exclusive titles that you couldn't get anywhere else. And, of course, it all culminated on the Wii with the inclusion of Snake in Super Smash Bros. Brawl. So, yeah, a lot of, you know, close working with Nintendo over the years.
Yeah, and going back a little further than that, they did have a really good Metal Gear game on Game Boy Color as well.
That's right.
It's called Ghost Babel in Japan, but just called Metal Gear here.
Well, it's called Metal Gear Solid here.
Oh, sorry, Metal Gear Solid. Although it was an entirely different game.
Yeah, it was a different story. I don't even think it's part of, you know, official Metal Gear canon. But yeah, it's one of the best Game Boy Color games, actually.
Mm-hmm,
a lot of fun.
For sure.
But, you know, that was then. This is now. They did continue with a lot of, you know, really cool GBA and DS support, you know, especially the Castlevania games, stuff like Lost in Blue. But, you know, that was like more than, you know, maybe 5 years ago. You know, after the 3DS came out, things really dried up. You know, there've been a couple of titles here and there, but not that much stuff. And it's not like this is exclusive, you know, to Nintendo platforms. Like we said earlier, it's pretty much across the board. They've just really stopped making games. And, you know, all the stuff we've talked about, the Gradiuses and the Contras and the Castlevanias, you know, as we've, you know, talked about in a recent episode, they did come back with, you know, a last hurrah on WiiWare. But, you know, those are the exceptions rather than the rule. And they just haven't been doing much with those properties other than that. You know, they would take a stab at it and be like, nah, we give up. We're just not going to try. And that stuff just seems to have gone away.
There was a period, I believe it was in the PS2 era, where they were, at least for a couple of years, the most profitable game publisher in Japan.
Oh, wow.
And a lot of that was based off of the Bimani series. The
Beatmania
games, the Dance Dance Revolution, all mm-hmm. that stuff. And,
yeah, that makes sense.
You know, another sign of how they've kind of missed opportunities over the years is, you know, as big as Guitar Hero and Rock Band became, mm-hmm. they did it first. They had Guitar Freaks in Japan with
the guitar controller. They didn't bother doing it in the U.S.
No,
they let someone else come in and just eat their lunch.
Yeah, I had picked up Guitar Freaks when I was in Japan one time, and I got back and I saw Guitar Hero, and I was like, Guitar Hero just literally like ripped. This is 99% Guitar Freaks.
Mm-hmm.
But Guitar Freaks was, you know, you would play Smoke on the Water or lots of J-pop tunes,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and you know, Guitar Hero put some real songs in there that people actually cared about. So it just shows that they didn't quite have the vision to take things that next step.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if they had thought that through, they wouldn't have had this fall from grace, or maybe it would have happened a little bit later. But you know, for whatever reason, you know, these properties just are not what they used to be, and I really, really wish that wasn't the case.
Which brings us back up to the present. And, you know, one of the things that I think interested us to talk about this today is that they did put a poll up online where they're asking people about a lot of their kind of forgotten IPs. And, and you know, they went down the list, everything from, you know, Castlevania to lesser known stuff like Sunset Heroes.
And Sunset Riders.
Sunset Riders.
That is the Wild West version of Contra, so to speak.
Right, right. So it was, they were asking people in these polls, like, you know, which of these franchises would you like to see back? How much do you care about them? What would you like to see them on console or, you know, pachinko or smartphones or whatever?
Well, they've actually asked about pachinko, but
And it was funny to see that, see them even, I mean, after all these years, recognize some of these franchises or even games like, you know, Sunset Riders, which wasn't necessarily even a franchise, but just a well-remembered game.
It was a one-off. It was an arcade game. They ported it to Super NES and Genesis, and that was like, you know, okay, one and done.
So, of course, you and I took the poll, and we put, you know, we want to see these things only on console on, like, every single franchise.
It's funny, they didn't let you, you know, choose on the poll if you wanted to see it on, like, a handheld game system. It was like, you know, mobile phone or console or PC.
Yeah. That maybe they consider handheld to be part of the console category.
Yeah, maybe.
But maybe that's a little silver lining. Maybe there's some hope there if they're at least remembering that they have these things and would even entertain the idea in a poll that they could put them out on a console.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it makes me wonder, you know, who came up with the poll? Is it just done by, you know, people in you know, the U.S. or Europe who want to be like, yeah, we want to prove that these brands actually do have people that care about them and they're viable? Or was this an edict from the folks out of Japan? You know, maybe the subsidiaries just want to be like, okay, we want to show our bosses, you know, overseas that this stuff is viable. We should move forward with this, or maybe it's not. Who knows? You know, I don't have any inside scoop on that. But you know, certainly wherever it came from, it's promising. It's a lot better than we are not going to do anything with these ever again. I'm glad that you know somebody involved with the company is thinking about it, and you know, personally, if they're not going to do anything with it themselves, I would love to see them, you know, maybe license some of the stuff out. Way Forward did an amazing job doing Contra 4 on the DS. And, you know, I know that they were planning to do some sort of, you know, Contra revival on consoles and handhelds a few years ago. You know, at Nintendo Power, you know, we were hoping to do a big reveal on whatever happened next with Contra, but, you know, that suddenly went poof, disappeared. And I have no idea, you know, what they are planning, but I would love to see them, you know, make it go back into the hands of Way Forward and just, you know, do a Contra 5. I think they could do amazing things with that. I think Way Forward could also do amazing things with Castlevania. You know, they've got a lot of Castlevania in their Shantae games and some other games they've done. And I think it, you know, it's very, very similar DNA at that studio to classic Konami.
They really do seem to lack any kind of, you know, steadfast vision. And I think what we've seen in the past, we saw this with some Contra games that were kind of released on PlayStation systems. And you know, I think they even released a Sparkster title at some point as a digital title.
Yeah, they did. They kind of released a Sparkster. They released a Russian Attack follow-up, if you remember that even.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. And then they also released, like you said, we mentioned in the last podcast, the new Gradius and Castlevania and Contra
if
titles.
By last podcast, you mean I mentioned about 5 minutes ago? Yes, I did.
on
WiiWare.
WiiWare. Mm-hmm. So those were, but they're just kind of dipping their toe in the water. None of this is, I mean, you know, when Nintendo, I think that the model here is, you know, Nintendo never let Mario die, so it's a little bit of an apples and oranges comparison. But when they came back strong with 2D Mario, they did, you know, people were like, do people even want 2D Mario anymore? Is that just too old school? But they brought back, you know, New Super Mario Brothers, and that became their biggest selling Mario franchise just because
they made
games.
They didn't half-ass it. They went all the way and, you know, put their best foot forward, you know, put, you know, good teams on it, and then marketed it really well also.
Yeah, and
this wasn't just some, you know, download that they had outsourced and, you know, kind of just put out there.
It's not like anybody's really going to discover a new Contra or Castlevania game on WiiWare.
Yeah, I mean, WiiWare was not the place to be for that sort of thing, as good as they were.
So I'm guessing they do these kind of things, and then the suits up the ladder at Konami look at it and say, well, you say that people remember these games fondly, but it's not turning into sales when we do try these little, you know, half-assed attempts.
Even full-assed attempts.
Yeah, so it's just, it's unfortunate. And now, you know, they say that they're going to try to continue the Metal Gear franchise, but I don't know how you do it without Kojima, and I don't know how you do it on a tighter budget, which seems to have been the thing that split them apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, after hearing these horror stories about working there, it seems like it'd be hard to entice good people to come work at the company, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, say what you want. Maybe Kojima did spend money like crazy or whatever, but that game's going to, you know, be a blockbuster and do huge sales. It's gotten amazing reviews.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did his job at the end of the day. And if the opposite way of thinking is, well, let's just float out this kind of, you know, kind of okay game in a digital only space and see if it, you know, maybe blows up and has people storming down our doors for more. Well, that's not going to get you anywhere.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, if this is, you know, the end of the era, if this, you know, Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, really is kind of the end of the road for Konami, well, it's been, you know, a fantastic run over the years. Not so much recently, but, you know, certainly the last couple of decades. A lot of these games are still available on Virtual Console, both on 3DS and Wii U, and Wii for that matter. You know, stuff like all the Castlevanias and most of the Contras, except for the original, which always sticks in my craw. Mystical Ninja, Axley, all that stuff. Yeah, if you've never played it, you know, go out there and see what all the fuss is about. If you have played it, you know, it's still fun to go back to.
Yeah, I mean, they really were great, great game makers. And, you know, I guess the last thing I'll say is that I just hope that if Konami does decide, look, we're taking our business in a different route, we're not really going to make a lot of games anymore, don't let the IP, you know, die with the Konami game.
Don't let it
brand.
Just turn into a pachinko machine.
Don't just keep it caged up because one day you might want to slap it on a pachinko machine. Sell it off. You know, let some other developer, you know, continue
the. Like I was saying with WayForward, license it to them or some other people who really care about the properties. I'm sure there are other indie developers who would be happy to do something great with it as well.
Yeah. If not, you know, folks like Nintendo. I mean, it's probably against the grain for what they do, but, you know, they seem to be working more closely with certain third parties, you know, bringing Mega Man into the fold when Capcom doesn't seem to want to do it. You know, who knows? I mean, just do something. Don't just sit on it and let it go away.
Yeah, hopefully it's not the end.
Yeah.
All right, that was a long discussion, and I think we're just about ready to wrap up today's show. But before we go, we're going to have a dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of the NES game, Ikari Warriors 2, Victory Road. When we last saw Paul and Vince, they had saved the Colonel and were about to head for home in a special plane given to them by the General. But then, while in flight over the ocean, the sky suddenly blackens, the ocean begins to churn, and the plane goes spinning. A booming voice fills the cockpit. Hear me, warriors. Zhang Zip the war dog has enslaved the people of Earth. Only you can save us from his grip of evil. Caught in a time warp, hurled thousands of years into the future, Paul and Vince know they have no choice but to meet this impossible challenge head on. After all, they are professionals. They are the Ikari Warriors.
It was nice of the General to give him a plane.
Why, yes. Yes, it was. But they are the Ikari Warriors.
They are the Ikari Warriors. Well, that's it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow the Hoff and myself on Twitter, at Chris the Hoff, and I'm at Chris Slate. Hoff has a really cool blog called Still Playing with Power, which you can find at christhehoff.tumblr.com. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com. And if you have a second, we always appreciate it if you could drop by iTunes and leave a rating.
Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Chris Slate.
See ya.
And the birthday boy, Mike Hagar. We will see you next time.